week from the New Media Newsroom. We have YouTubers. Does YouTube want you to Bandersnatch your own adventure? Is the future of YouTube interactive storytelling? What is interactive storytelling? Do you want more visitors on your website? How could you use social media to drive traffic to your homepage? From the Uber bot desk, what happened when an Uber bot tweeted a racial slur? On the New Media Newsroom, can venues dream up business with social media and apps?
In the Game of Thrones news,
how did Game of Thrones engage fans with social media?
All this and more coming up on OWWI, on by Spray Web Radio, streaming live from the University of New
choosing what the character in the video was going to do next, and what the SID was, would click the choice and would get directed to another video. Users like Shane Dawson and I believe a couple of others, they would make these stories where you would pick what the character would do next, and there would be different themes like genres of horror and romance. It was a way for the viewer to basically be more interactive and basically jump into the story itself.
So how is YouTube becoming more interactive for its users?
With Netflix launching, well, it released Bandersnatch a couple of months ago, and it gave viewers on Netflix a chance to click on choices during the movie, and you could basically pick what the character was doing inside the movie. And on YouTube, it's kind of the same thing where they're reviving something from the early 2000s.
Choose your own adventure concept, drive more subscribers to the channel, do you think?
So what it does is, every time on YouTube, when you click a choice, you're directed to a new video. So what that does is it drives more views on your channel, and it gives the viewer a chance to see more of what you have to offer on your channel. Instead of just watching one video and then they click off the video, this gives the uploader a chance to have a viewer watch more videos in a given short period.
I'm assuming they give you like certain choices you make, so a lot of times you can drive people back to see what would happen if they choose another. So
right.
That could drive up the viewers.
Exactly.
As well.
So that they're clicking on more videos and being more interactive with the channel. And as far as analytics goes and how YouTube registers that, it's not seeing it as, oh, the user is playing a game. It's literally seeing the user watch multiple videos on a channel. So it's kind of a way to cheat the system a little bit. You're kind of you're allowing people the opportunity to watch more of your content, basically.
Right, and as someone who, let's say, not as someone who promotes videos, but as just like a fan, do you enjoy the whole choose your own adventure thing?
So, for me personally, I'm not a big, like, gamer, so it doesn't appeal to me so much. Actually, the concept, though, of driving people to watch more of your content, that's something that I feel like I would get on board with. The gaming industry is ridiculously huge, and there are platforms like Twitch that are specifically for gaming, and this kind of allows a regular video to become a game in a way, and there are so many people that are drawn to that, and so many people that would flock to that type of content. You can even relate it to beauty videos, honestly. You know, I don't think this has ever been done before, but a beauty channel could do a choose your own adventure makeup petition where you pick and choose what the next step of the researching this, and it's a way to incorporate two worlds together, and that's something that's never been done before. So.
That's actually really interesting. Yeah, right. For me personally, like, I like the game, and I love storytelling.
Right.
I don't really know how I would want to like put them both together.
You can even do it with cooking as well. If you are cooking.
this is like similar to the Instagram could control my life videos. Like, I've been seeing that as like a trend, like,
yeah.
Instagram followers control my day.
Well, that became so popular where people went on Instagram and they were asking their subscribers to basically pick and choose what they did during the day, and so many people wanted to get on board with that because they felt that as if they were controlling the person, as if they were the character in a video game, which was awesome.
Right. And I also feel like, too, like, a lot of those Instagram stories, like, people get so involved in those because it's almost like you're living vicariously through them.
Absolutely.
So
they
self-directed. Absolutely. So how does that really affect this in general? How does that affect the viewership?
So it drives your views on your videos. Instead of someone coming to your channel and just watching one video, they now will watch that one video. At the end of that video, there'll be two different options. You click one of the options and you'll be directed to another video on that channel. So how YouTube registers that again is the user has now watched two videos on that channel, and you could do a choose your own adventure story with 15 choices. So that's 15 videos in that period of time that viewer is now watching instead of just the one regular video. And again, you can do it with beauty, cooking. You can incorporate this into pretty much any genre on YouTube.
Are you going to start with one thing?
I actually thought of a makeup thing that nobody has done before.
I think you should do it.
That sounds pretty awesome to
me. Yeah, absolutely.
For Global Media News, I am Emily Zumbeck. Back to you, Eric.
Thanks, Emily.
Absolutely,
especially in business too. Like, there's different things you can do, like even for advertising. to me, so like, especially like Emily, she does a lot of videos, so YouTube obviously is the best bet. But, you know, on, in general terms, I mean, Twitter seems to be the like high watermark for professionalism. You know, a lot of celebrities, a lot of sports athletes using it. You can do pictures, you can do videos, you can do statuses, you can share articles. It's so, you know, personal, and it's set up that I think if you can really utilize Twitter to your advantage, that's probably the best bet. And it's probably the best way to get the most traffic.
Are there any lesser-known platforms that you recommend people to promote the website?
This is from one example. A lot of people don't really use Reddit to their example, to their full potential. And the thing, a lot of people, you know, it's very popular Reddit, but again, it's not really known in certain aspects. So Reddit, from one situation, is
after this, I'm like, I'll test Reddit.
There it is. Yeah, perfect. So I guess it's more than usual, but again, like, what they're really strict about the content you put. They don't want any spamming, and they don't want any sort of thing. So, like, again, you have to be careful with that, because when I use it, my friend does a libertarian blog, essentially. So what we use is political subreddits, and subreddits are essentially subcategories. The libertarian page doesn't mind having blogs posted on there. However, the politics page, which has more users, they don't want any blogs. So we actually got booted from there trying to speak our blog in a few times. But there's so many people viewing that that is one of the best ways to drive traffic that not many people are using. So that's just a heads up for anyone trying to really try to expand their blog. So
yeah, I just use that for memes.
So, yeah, you know, you can use it for memes too. But yeah, there's a lot of, and again, like, I usually read it. It's slogan is the front page of the internet, which is really what you want to do. Is to be promoting a blog, you want to get on the front page. So it's a really good tool, and I highly recommend it. So, reporting for Global Media News, I am Eric Lantro. Back to you, Eric Unfinch.
Thanks, Eric. Uber uses its apps and social media to interact with customers. Recently, Twitter erupted after Uber automated live streaming a racial slur in response to customers. What did Uber do that caused social media backlash?
Uber is used as a quick and innovative way to make traveling more easy for people who are on the go. But as of lately, Uber has received a lot of controversy over a racist tweet that was in response to an unsatisfied customer. According to the United Journal Constitution, the customer posted, "I had an awful driver today. I want my money back. Please respond so we can work this out." Uber tweeted with, "We're so sorry about that, N-word. Please send us a DM with your phone number with additional details of your concerns so we can connect." Uber's use of the N-word received so much backlash that, being that Uber is already under the radar with a list of reporting incidents involving safety, a decrease in numbers have been made in response to its allegations. Despite the apology that Uber gave, Twitter was not impressed.
That's crazy. So what do you think prompted the Uber bots to use the N-word in response?
Well, according to a site called Mashable, the Twitter user posing as an Uber customer did indeed temporarily set their Twitter display name to a racist slur. The troll involved was allegedly a MAGA supporter who was retweeting racist replies. Apparently, they were trolling Uber in hopes for a bot reply. According to Complex, the user who initially sent the complaint at RealBChinee, who, by the looks of his account, is a MAGA supporter who often posts and retweets offensive content to his page, even though Uber's support was not so automated. It wasn't a case of racist customer support employee typing out the word. The fact still remains that Uber's technology can be manipulated so easily is a bit alarming. Uber's customers are stunned about Uber's thoughtful customer services and they want them to fix it.
That's insane.
Well, they posted it. They tweeted an apology saying that, "We'd like to sincerely apologize for the offensive tweet that was sent earlier. We're investigating what happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. This was tweeted by Uber support in 2009 to 2019.
Awesome. So, how do you think Uber can impact this technology?
I feel like they need more people talking to people and not automatic responses. So something like this doesn't happen again. If it was a regular person, they would have taken the next step and not moved. They could have handled it differently. So Global Media News, I am Tanisha Smith. Back to you, Eric Unfinch.
Thanks, Tanisha.
like, well, I tell you, this is how it should go. The venue makes money off the ticket sales, and they get the money they make from the ticket sales. So, the bands, right? That's how it works. We have some bands, we paid like 10% of the appointments that we sold on tickets. Now, the venue makes the money, drinks, food, and some food. That's special revolution. Not a special kind of local revolution, we used to call it. And they make their money off drinks, gift card, money, too. The ticket sales money to the bands, brilliant. First grade. A lot of local vendors are just taking the money and giving. Well, not all the money, but local promoters are taking the money and giving the bands. Right. So what I feel like they should do is they should incorporate social media to get more people to come. This way they will buy more drinks, food, and they can be more musicians. There's a website called absinceinstitute.com. They have a story called 5 Ideas for Music Companies. So one of their ways was a ticketing app. You know, most people have to go buy tickets from the bands. But this ticketing app will make buying tickets more easy. Pay the venue, and they just have a digital ticket on their app. They just go there and not have to worry about paying, you know, getting cash because it stays more digital. And then just paying the money to the venue.
Just a quick question, this can say I'm not really too familiar. So, for me, how exactly is there like a contract that bands have to sign to play somewhere? Like, is there some like formal agreement or something? Because I always thought that the band will be like, okay, we would like to play here. And then there's, if they say, like, okay, you're only going to get 10%, this is like decided beforehand. Like, they get to choose how much money you guys get.
Yep.
But it's like they're saying, like, okay, we're only going to this much.
Yeah.
I feel like there's like even stand-up comedians and stuff like that. Like they have their own website where they can like try to sell their own tickets.
Yeah.
So is that like something that you guys have ever done? Or
we just go through the promoters and sell the tickets. Okay. With ticketing app, we can reserve more tickets. Sell them to be easier for you. You don't have to go to the bank without money. It's direct from the phone. Another way. So they could put in some money towards the venue for every access line, and they could the promoters can give the bands money for every time they get streams. Another way they could do it is simply just making an app that like a tipping app for the bands, so they could like give the bands like more money.
Right, exactly.
So they can make money. Like, when I was playing in the band, we made most of our money on merch, CDs, and t-shirts, actual ticket sales.
That's right, yeah, absolutely.
But even then, making money is just, it's not easy.
Making
money to make insurance, to make CDs.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that. Because,
yeah.
Like, you know, with the merch, you know, making your own t-shirts and, like, you know,
yeah,
being
that's what we made our own t-shirts. Sales at a show would be like $60.
Okay.
But that was like our home show after the school, which we had, you know, spent money on gas, food, hotels, other stuff, you know. Just like, and we're still
So. millions of fans all over the world. How has this television program built this enormous following online? What can we learn about how the network and the producers of the show have used social media to engage viewers and keep this incredible fan excitement going during this final season? How much of this social media chatter is fan-generated content? How much of it is social media marketing? Steven, tell us about your relationship with Game of Thrones Online. Where do you go online to keep up with the latest conversations about Game of Thrones?
I get all, like, the conspiracies on Reddit, for sure. There's a huge population of Game of Thrones fans, also people who've read the books. Game of Thrones is based on a series of books taken exactly from the novels, and they're portrayed in the show exactly from the novels. So, Season 8, Episode 3, was the most expensive battle scene in the history of the Allies. It was an hour and 30 minutes long, which is really, really long for a particular battle scene.
Absolutely.
It was extremely intuitive. I thought it was amazing. Did anybody else see the episode?
I didn't really know how much Game of Thrones, to be honest.
Really? Sorry.
Too far deep into the rabbit hole.
Oh my god, yes, I'm missing out.
I haven't even finished season one yet, so I'll get that eventually.
I bet. I hope.
I actually read the first two books, though.
Oh, really?
I saw the first two seasons and I stopped. I actually, like, it's just for me because, like, there's too many people, there's too many worlds, and, like, my head can't, you know, handle that.
So you read the books, the Song of Ice and Fire.
That's the first one, right?
Yeah,
I read that. Okay. And that was pretty much word for word the same as the first season. Like, they did it perfectly with that.
A lot of people actually were, like, very upset that the last season 8, episode 4 that came out this past Sunday, they were, like, very upset because it went a different way than the actual books went. So people were, like, super, like, you know,
the books aren't even done yet, right?
Yeah.
Like, so it's, like, it's going to be different. Is this the final season?
Yeah, it is.
He hasn't even read in, like, the last, what, two or three books he has to do left, so it's going to happen. You have to make it exactly perfect.
Yeah, but on the social media aspect, I think Reddit is the perfect place for it because you can get, like,
people. All right, fine, Reddit is actually bigger than I thought. I get it.
Yeah, totally. But then also, like, HBO, they do a lot of, like, social media advertising for it. Like, I know they have their own Twitter, it's really just Game of Thrones. HBO, I got it. So then they have the Instagram, like, posting pictures of every week on each one. Like, I see people online posting themselves on their Snapchat, on their Instagram. It's like, all right, well, Game of Thrones Sunday night, 9 o'clock, but they're ready for it. I know that this past Sunday I saw, like, 50 people on my social media that just posted about it.
Well, it's funny, too, because I'm a big sports nut, and I watch a lot of Yankee games, and they're actually a hit Game of Thrones Yankee night, where they're promoting, where they have a throne at the stadium, and you get a shirt with Game of Thrones and the Yankee symbol on it, which is exclusive for the first, like, 18,000 fans. So it's getting promotion literally everywhere.
Everywhere.
That's big of promotion. When they were launching the throne everywhere, they were almost at my town in Bayside, Queens. Yeah, it's all about, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's I would love to go set up the fire.
Oh, yeah, well, I didn't go see the lines are extremely long. And they could, but it was really cool that, you know, they brought the throne to my hometown, which is pretty cool. Now, have you used social media to engage with the Game of Thrones stuff, or is it just really expected to use the kind of scenic following?
I think both, obviously. In, like, season 5, when I was watching, I really was, like, kind of confused what was going on. I wanted to see people's theories on what's going to happen. So, like I said, I went to Reddit, and there's a whole page strictly for Game of Thrones theories and, like, explaining the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was so useful. I mean, I feel like Reddit is so, like, undervalued, especially that, like, I feel like it should just be used.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like, these theories, too, like, that's a huge thing now with all shows. I feel like everyone's trying to put their own two cents in for what's going to happen, and I feel like social media has been the huge catalyst of that, to be able to engage with people who watch the show, their fans, and they can kind of just try to see where things are going to go. So I think that's a huge thing for, especially Game of Thrones.
I agree, because, like, for this particular season, I think they spent $90 million to make the entire season. If you haven't seen it yet, then you're probably a little bit on waters. I think $30 million strictly to that episode. So like, this is like a shaping episode. That's why I really love this movie. This week.
Oh yeah, and again, if you think about it, $90 million, like for one episode. That's just an insane amount of money to do one episode. Like, that's insane. But again, like, you know, when you, like, I saw the first couple seasons, I would comment on, like, how the CGI looks kind of bad, and, you know, why I feel like it's not that good. And then I'm looking at the trailers on TV and, like, the upcoming seasons, and I'm like, God, it's like night and day, how much they advance. So, popularity and promotion, like, the fact that it became such a huge phenomenon, like, makes it better work in the future. So, I feel like that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to share my piece on the Game of Thrones, honestly, because I loved the episode last week. Honestly, this particular show, it is so in-depth, and it is so... The acting is amazing. The battle scenes are insane. Because the idea of the show is that there's seven kingdoms, and they fight to, like, have the Iron Throne, which is seven kingdoms. So it's, like, all this drama going on. Honestly, it's just an amazing show. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it.
Great. What can I find it on?
Oh, HBO. It's an HBO strictly show. This is Steven Spiegel with Paul Williams. Back to New York.
Thanks, Steven. That's all for this week. Thanks to my co-host, Eric Oakridge.
Thanks for watching with me this week, Eric. Thanks to our amazing producer, Smith Sally,
today, we're going to record for myself, Tasia Smith, Steven Spiegel, Eric Oakridge, and Emily Zimbat.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWI with Westbury and Web Radio and Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College of Business.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at globalmedianews.org, where you can listen to all